Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden, On the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll dig deep into indigenous agriculture knowledge. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters. Today, we'll treat you to two special lectures on the importance of grounding our agricultural practices on the wisdoms of the ancients. Over millennia, indigenous cultures worldwide have developed a keen sense of their local environments and biodiversity, and maintain a reverence for the delicate balance contained within them. We'll begin our exploration with Kumu Jerry Konanui, renowned kalo and ava farmer and educator from Hawaii Island. This talk was recorded at Chris Kobayashi and Demi Rivera's organic farm in Waioli Valley on the north shore of Kauai.
What you see here is some of our heirloom, our Hawaiian kalo. Some of these varieties go far back into time where only the recorded olelo or the chants were used, and these are here today. Our farmers today, we're trying to verify our Ike Kupuna, the knowledge from our ancestors. Because a lot of people look down on us as mahi'ai, as farmers. He's only a farmer. They fail to realize that to be a good mahi'ai, yeah, you have to know the universe of a mahi'ai. Which means I have to be a water scientist. I have to be a soil scientist. I have to be a weatherman, to be able to sense the wind, the rain, the whole environment is my universe. So when people look at a mahi'ai or a farmer or a hula dancer and say, she's just a kumu hula, or he's just a farmer, they don't realize the extent of knowledge. Kupuna ike, the knowledge of our ancestors, is the science. The big difference with science today and a science of yesterday is one. Science of yesterday, we're not limited by money. Two, we're not limited by time. It takes us three generations to verify that that variety can grow in the cold waters or the hot water. That's what it will take. Today's science, they focus all the way down to the atom, to the element. But because they're restricted by funding and time, the focus is too narrow. They don't know the consequences of what is outside of this lo'i. They don't know that 5 years from now, that taro deep bread will be invasive and take over the lo'i and choke out the rest of the taro. The science today, we as practitioners need to malama, to have them sit down with us and tell us what is their intention. What are they trying to do when they hybridize a certain variety of taro? The quest for the super taro, the taro that will grow in every environment, in every situation, is a myth. The varieties we have that our ancestors passed us down to us is extreme. When I say extreme, Kalopaua, the only one that could grow in the desert of Kau. Yeah? Pico Uliuli and Pico Olono, yeah? Pico Eleele. These are taro was bred by our ancestors that could tolerate the warm water, the cold water. Today people say, Uncle Jerry, they go, I like dry land taro or I like wetland taro. The taro doesn't care what environment you put it in. It can handle. The problem is the ike. The modern farmer today do not have that knowledge. They'll plant in the center of the field a row of manaulu. They don't know the story of that manaulu. They don't know the mo'oku auhau of that kalo. They don't know that's the fastest maturing taro in all of the Hawaiian selection. So, ike kupuna, you don't plant it in the middle the middle row of the lo'i. You put that, the first one, on the bank. Because when that matures, you can harvest without disturbing the other rows. You put it in the center. By the time you harvest your PLE, your pico kyo kyo, that guy is already rotten and gone. Then you blame the taro. It doesn't like the water. A'ole. Ike kupuna remains in us and our DNA. In the rush today of making kala, money, we forget a lot of these important things. Our kupuna had to know. It wasn't a matter of making money. It was a matter of whether you have food or not. The survival of our people, this knowledge was very crucial. Today we're in Chris and Demi's lo'i, and I notice here they have many different varieties of kalo. We have kalo ohe. Ohe is bamboo. So what is the relationship of that taro and bamboo? The characteristic is like the ohe bamboo. Light green with dark green stripe on the lihi. Yeah? Now you say, so what? Well, the knowledge and the mo'olelo of that taro will tell you its uniqueness. Kohala Mountain, my ohana, Uncle Earl, well, love to eat ohe. So I give him huli, he go up, he plant. After he planted, he come back down about a year later, said, oh, Jerry, I need some more huli. Mine are in Maki. I gave him some more huli. He kanu. The third time he came back to ask for more huli, I told him, you never hear a taro tell you something. He no like live up there with the big wind and the hot. The palate of the kanaka has to change today. No maha'oi what's good on the other side. Your kanu, what is good for your aina, that is what going to sustain you and your ohana. Not the magical wish and desires of your humanness, yeah? Oh, I like this because, oh, the bugger look nice. Yeah? Our orchards, our forestry people, they understand that. I don't care how much you like peaches, you stay in Pune, it ain't gonna grow for you, yeah? We have to be accommodating with nature. Nature gonna give us our needs. So you go down, we're gonna walk down here on this kalo. I'm gonna try not to disturb its roots. But you look, I was telling you how they've got the varieties. Now this particular one is an interesting one. This is Pololu. And the name, it comes from the Pololu Valley on Hawaii Island. Now, they tell me some of the Japanese who cultivate this variety have another name for it. It's called Bakatari. Yeah? So why do they call it Bakatari? It's because when they cook it and you let it get cold and you try to cook it, that thing fly all over the place like crazy. Yeah? So the millers don't like this taro because you wear the machine out. So they don't produce this, they don't buy this, they don't want nothing to do with it. But if you've ever eaten Pololu Pai'ai, oh, this baga is so ono. But commercial-wise, it has no value for them. But for kanaka mahi'ai like me, ah, oh, this is one I gonna treasure on the side, yeah? This color, one of the hardest color ones have. When you cook it, it say, lina, lina. Oh, that bagaka, beautiful. You pick them up like on mochi, eh? The Japanese ground rice. Pull them up. That is what Hawaiians love, yeah? The more the dakalo, after you cook it and you kui, can absorb water, the more pa'i'ai you have for feed your ohana. So it is not how many acres or how many lo'i you have. It is the quality of each kalo. That is what maximizes. Why plant six rows when one kalo, kanu, can give you 17 pounds? Yeah? My friend said, oh, Uncle Jerry, I got half an acre dry land, I want kanu. I said, how many labor help you have? He said, oh, just me and my wife. I said, I'd like you have your phone number. Because when some time to harvest, because you're going to plant all one time, I go, yeah, I know you're going to have more than you can sell or give away. So I'll call you then and come help you take it off your hands. Eh? When I started to them and talk about how this tarot can come big, all I see the eyeballs rolling with the dollar sign. Yeah? And after they plan, they don't listen, see? Once the dollar sign starts rolling, they don't listen. It's later when I gotta go come and go hustle for Makana, all that tarot to my ohana. I love it. Yeah? We all get free tarot. But alolo, nahoi. Why you plan so much? I go to his Uncle Jerry, oh, the tarot no do good for me. I say, well, I look your patch. Hey, look here, how clean. This is an organic Carlo farm. No herbicide, no pesticide, commercial kind, yeah? Look how beautiful. Look around you. You see all the grass on the other side. Those patches are being fallowed. The worms are in there. They're building up the soil. It is not us throw food for the taro. We throw food for the aina. The worms, the bacteria in there, they break down the food we hanai them. They're the one that produce the mea'ai for that kalo. That is why the difference when we see them throw chemical fertilizers. Oh, baga, oh, we. I hear the makani puyo say, oh, the taro weak. Hey, I put you in a room, feed you dog food and water every day for 9 months. You be ma'i too. You be sick too. This is a living organism. It blends. It is more adaptive than to us, many of us. I like you focus on that taro. You see that all that leaf funny kind? This is called Colocasia. That's our taro, Colocasia escalante, Phytophthora. This fungus, yeah. Now, I like my mom. My mom is always, whether it be bugs or disease, she said, hey, as long as they leave me my share, yeah? How you avoid this or get as minimum as you can is through hanai, maika'i. Feed the taro well. Give them enough water for inu, yeah? That they're going to resist. I can tell you one story just lately, confirmed by my scientist friend at the university. They were breeding a taro variety to be resistant to this, yeah? And he was all excited because at the university farm in Hilo, where I planted varieties for distribution, there was this Phytophthora. So he took this Phytophthora, took it in the lab, he prepared it, and he tried infecting this hybrid. Hey, the hybrid, oh, hold off, hold real good. Then he went to Hamakua Coast, picked up the Phytophthora from another farm, came back, infected that hybrid, and what happened? Oh, the baga in maki. What they don't realize is taro, Phytophthora, they are living organisms, yeah? You go take a little bit of water away, he's going to change the taro. He's going to be a little shorter, a little stockier. He's adapting to it. You take this guy, you put a genes in a taro or whatever you do to make it stronger, this guy is moving. So what are you doing? You are wasting your time. You need to go to the fact, why does this come? You look over here, look, only this one. Look at the other taro, they might cut it. Yeah? This is nature at its worst and at its best. It's adapting, it's balance. You can always have mea'ai when you give the color what it needs. When you think you're going to be better, you're going to make more color than you get in water, you're going to stress the taro out. Just like the human. You stress them, the bugger catch cold. Same thing here. The plants are no different. Now, we come to varieties, yeah? We get beautiful. This is a pico variety. See how the leaf cut in? All the way down to the apex, yeah? Maybe this side better to show, yeah? What is the mo'olelo of pico varieties? Another name for it is ha'e, yeah? Cut. So people say, hey, you know, we go windy kind place. This is the kalo. She no rip. She aerodynamics. No, yeah? Wind come, she just adjusts it. She moving. She not going to tear like some of the moe or the other varieties. This color, this beautiful black, it is called ipu olono for the mo'olonos. the followers of Lono, yeah, Ipu Lono. But we must realize there's others. Wehiva, Kalu Wehiva, that's also. So it depends who the practitioner is. It depends the aina he's there, what is appropriate and what is not. Now, I want to show you this little device. Amahiaya, taro fama. Our kupuna, we don't have that kalo here, but it's a variety of taro called kalo pa'akai. Pa'akai means salt. Why would our Hawaiians call this taro pa'akai or salt? Some guys say, oh, taste salty. Oh, how come taste salty? The story about kalo pa'akai was that was grown in the Lihikai, the edge of the ocean where the brackish water comes in. Sometimes pu'uwai comes up, yeah? So the variation of the salinity, the saltiness of that, these kalo pa'akai was bred by our kupuna that could grow in that. So when my doctor friend Dennis Gonzalez wanted to genetic engineer a taro to have that tolerance, I said, whoa, doc, we get them already. We have that taro. So he said, okay, Jerry, bring your taro. We go see how that thing works. Shoot, I bring them in. So they made a test. And this is where Ike Kupuna versus science today. They bring a big plastic container. They fill them up with tap water. Yeah, with the hose, they fill them up. Then they go get one bag salt. They put inside. They float, put the floater for measure the salinity. Yeah. Oh, okay, get in the teens, amakai. We're going to see how strong this plant going to grow. How, I go crazy when I hear that. Our taro doesn't grow in a tub with salt water and with salt mixed with fresh water. Our taro in the brackish water has nutrients down. So this test is not pa'a, it's not pono. The result you're going to get is already kapulu de hana. Hana kapulu. You got to throw that away with it because no matter the result come, it's not practical. So we bring the mahi'ai. We bring the farmer who has this ike. So what he does, because us farmers no more money. Yeah, we go to a friend and we ask her. We tell her what we're trying to do. And so my friend loaned me this gauge. With this gauge, I can dip it in the water and I look inside and he gonna tell me how many percent salt get. So today, or actually this week, I'm coming back and I'm taking specific areas around this. I'm gonna take it at high tide, at low tide, and I'm gonna measure the salinity. If I can find difference or variation, we're gonna plant that taro. And we're going to monitor him, we're going to document, and we're going to verify our kupuna ike that it is salt tolerant. It is no doubt in my mind when our kupuna say something, it is so. When a scientist who got 30 years of knowledge tells me something, and my kupuna for 8 generations tell me something, guess who I'm going to believe? Yeah? So, technology today I use very much for a purpose of confirmation of Ike Kupuna. Because nobody listens to a mahi'ai, yeah? So what I gotta do is I gotta speak in their language. I gotta tell them the amount of salinity in there, the tide fluctuation. Hey, we can get down. You don't have to get a PhD. Mine is a LPM, Lepopolo Mahi'ai, yeah? I challenge any of my researchers, come in the patch. First thing you like, say my taro, I'm going to tell you what their name. They don't know their name. Tell me their story. They cannot even tell me the story because they don't know their name. So, how are you going to save us if you don't even know them, their characteristics? You already put the mana'ulu in the center of there and went all rotten when you got there and you said, oh, that taro no like the water. How deep is that?
You're listening to In the Garden on the Farm, and we're listening to Uncle Jerry Konanui talk about kalo growing practices.
So today, I work with a lot of my university friends, and I try to put out the fire before it's created. Kalamai. When I say put out fire, I'm talking about misinformation. I have a gentleman who works, he's a student, he's going for his PhD, and he calls me, says, Uncle Jerry, I want to work on Uwala. Gives me 2 pages of all this work he has. So I said, Hawaiian sweet potatoes, yes. I said, do you know their names? No, I don't. Okay. That's a major problem. Yeah. Because a potato is a potato. Now, if you Uwala, sweet potato pia. When you hook that Uwala out, it needs to be white. Because the pia plant, the name that related to it is. Now, you get one variety with a stick inside and a name says Huamoa. When you pull that Uwala and you cut the io, it better look like on chicken eggs, yellow inside. But when you go to the collections with this wonderful 26 Hawaiian varieties, 40 Hawaiian varieties, and I start cutting, and I go, oh my God. Names are wonderful, but names are vital. Yeah? Leleaku ka mo'olelo. Once you let that go, you know can bring back, just like GMO. So when you put your mea mana on top and you say, this is Uwala pia, that bugger better be white. Otherwise, all that kupuna that follow you, they're watching you from under those trees, they're going to say, lolo yake kanaka. Where that boy coming from? Yeah? It is important what comes from your mouth. Yeah? Lelo ola, lelo make. That's very important. How you present yourself to the environment you work in. Before you even come in here, at the gate, at the entrance of your mala or your lo'i, you vehe yourself. Vehe, you open yourself up. You give yourself the opportunity to listen to your uhane that follows you and guide you. This is your kupuna. These are your aumakuas. They're going to take you. They're going to allow you to hear the little voices. I think the English, they call it deja vu. You know you've never been there, but you know what's got there. Yeah? Ike kupuna. It's in your DNA whether you like it or not. Don't get confused by distractions around you. Rely on those that stand behind you and support you. That is how you're going to learn the generations of knowledge that our kupuna had, because they wasn't restricted by money or time. That is your library, yeah? The library you see today in a lot of the stories in the books, that's Maika'i. But the real Mahi'ai, he no need that resource. It's all here. If you're tutu kanu, yeah, Mahi'ai, it's here. But he's not going to talk to you, and you're not going to hear him unless you vehe yourself, yeah? You come in, you take out all the distraction, and you mahi'ai. And that voice will tell you, ah, wait, too shallow you kanu. Ah, you planted on too close to here. The root's going to come, he's going to eat up all the nutrients. Yeah? People say, oh, it's common sense. It's more than common sense. It is the alert from your kupuna. So I want to get back into varieties. Today, this is how we preserve our biodiversity. This beautiful color here is a lehua. Yeah? How do I know it's a lehua? E ma'ano. Yeah? Ho'omau, I kanu this. Yeah? The doctor says, Jerry, how many years you get in studying taro? Because I've studied taro for 30 years. That's how sarcastic he told me. So I look at him without blinking and I say, conservatively, 150 years. That's my grandpa, my mom, my dad, and I. But if you like, I go back 8 generations, he can know. Can. That knowledge that we can pull is so piha. It takes us, when I first go and I get this call behind me, tell me, hey, Manini Owali. Whoa, long time I no see you, Manini Owali. I look the characteristics, the purple, the lihi on the low, and the apex under there go all the way up, yeah? What does that mean? For the uninitiated, that means nothing. But for the initiated, whose kupuna grew that color, they know that you look over here, you see nanamai, you see a runner come out. Right here. Here is another baby. Another baby. So people tell me, Uncle, Hawaiian tower no throw runners, right? Ole, they do. How can they throw runners? Is it because they don't have food? Or they get too much food? It's like nature, the African Serengeti. When the rain come in, all these things grow, come up. Yeah. The animals, what do? They create. They make babies. Same thing like the color. You give them good mea'ai food. You give them good water, good sunshine. Look, she like make more babies. Maika'iloa. That is the olelo, the mo'olelo of the kalo, yeah? Especially in this manini family. Now, I told you about kalo pa'akai. We want to find the salinity. I also would like with my friends is to document all of our taro that has names related to the kai, like o'opu kai, kai ala, kai kea, kai uli uli. All those varieties, o'opu kai. We want to kanu and see if our kupuna was so deep that this kalo was related to the cultivation near Alihikai, near the beach. Yeah? How wonderful is that? People are concerned about the rise of the tide and the rise of the sea level. Our kupuna there too. They went breed this taro for that purpose. Yeah? So very, very important. Now I'm going to step over to this other variety. This other variety belongs in the pico family because come down here, yeah, the lau, cut just like the pico. But if you nanamai, if you look underneath, you can see these ruffles, yeah? Yeah? So when you see this ruffle and you feel the haar at the apex, even if you're a blind person, you would know the name of this taro is Pico Lehua Apei or APP. Yeah? Lehua, what is the name of the Lehua? Well, Lehua can mean many things, but in this situation, it resembles the blossom. We're talking about the Ohi'a Lehua, the red Ohi'a Lehua. Now, why would they call this taro that? Because if you look at this young leaf, it has this bronze color, yeah? The one that just opened up, the mohala. And this is one of the characteristics of all the Lehuas we have. And when you cut that underneath, if you were to cut that corm and you put them in a wheelbarrow with all the other different Lehua, like Lehua Pala'i'i, Lehua Ma'oli, or the Maui Lehua, you're not going to be able to tell a difference because they look the same. And when you make poi, it will hoo red, yeah, like the Lehua. Ohi'a Lehua. So that kind mana'o is in each one, is in its name. Very, very important. Now we step over to this beautiful striped kalo here. Now we look and we see it has stripes, yeah? The striped taro belongs, this particular one is called Manini Opelu, yeah? All manini kalo has stripes. Not all striped kalo belongs to the manini family. So this is another one we're going to test using the salinity. Yeah? Looking like over here, this is the Ula Ula family. We have three today. So maika'iloa, we have all these wonderful, they can grow in certain... Oh, look at this beautiful one here. This belongs to the ka'i family, yeah? Or ka'i. Ka'i. And I look at this and I know it can be one of two. Either it's kai ala or kai kea. I go reach down, I hemo the kohina, I go and see that. Yeah. So what we talk today is the diversity of our kalo that will sustain us. It's just like us today. We come from different islands, do different places. Some of us are hunters, some of us are mahi'ai. This diversity is what sustains a kanaka. And the diversity of our kanaka is also for survival, yeah? uncle, he's a pig raiser. Or brother, he's a mahi-ai. Or that one is a fisherman. We all work together. Diversity, each one is important. Kalopaua, they will let them go because too small. When you're out in a Kau desert and you have nothing else to eat, and that kalopaua, he give you mea'ai, it's not too small. You see what I mean? We as human beings, especially Western influence, we have to get away from the kaimana'o. Yeah? The answer is in our kupuna. Ike kupuna. Mahalo.
Uncle Jerry, thank you for enlightening us with your mana'o about growing taro. We are so grateful.
Next, we hear a documentary entitled The Great Laws of Nature, Indigenous Organic Agriculture, which features the wisdom of the First Nations people of Saskatchewan, Canada. Mahalo to the Muscadet Organic Growers Co-op for this presentation.
Out of nothing, the Creator made rock, water, fire, and wind. From these four substances, He created the physical world of sun, stars, moon, and earth. Then, He made the plant beings.
What we have to do is, we have to study nature. Nature is the greatest teacher. If you take time and listen, nature lives with in harmony with itself. Each looks out for the other, each protects the other. There is no warring, there is no gossip, there is nothing. They live in harmony and side by side. They're not fighting over that piece of land that they grow from. That is organic, as designed by our Creator.
There are four kinds of plant beings: flowers, grasses, trees, and vegetables. To each, the Creator gave a spirit of life, growth, healing, and beauty. Each He placed where it would be most beneficial, and lent to earth the greatest beauty, harmony, and order.
It's a belief that everything has life and everything has spirit. We pray to these plant spirits. These spirits were put here on this earth to look after all living things. They are at work in the universe here. Everything here has a purpose in its natural state, and it's that purpose that we have to try to emulate within that relationship. These plants.
Our people believe all life is connected. You certainly hear from the mainstream society, it's good to talk to your plants. And that's taken quite seriously with the First Nations.
After plants, the Creator made animal beings, conferring on each special powers. Last, He made man, the keepers of the earth.
You know, we'll take care of you. We'll deal with your enemies, you know, the other weeds and the other competitors. And in turn, you can feed us and take care of us at some point. Our people were food secure at one time before the treaties. We put ourselves under the care of the crown and have been living in poverty and hunger since. So our people know that they can be food secure and food sovereign, and we can take care of ourselves.
Though man was last in order of creation, He was given the greatest gift, the power to dream.
Muscadet Organic Workers Co-op was set up 4 years ago to facilitate their learning the skills of gardening. They grew 7 acres of potatoes this year and 3 acres of vegetables, all certified organic. Well, our philosophy is caring for the earth The potatoes that are not grown organically are sprayed about 6 times for bugs and for weeds. And everything that gets into these leaves gets into the potato, and then we eat them. There's been a marked increase in the last 30, 40, 50 years in cancers in this community, and they're blaming the pesticides.
Well, I remember when we were the first farm, we didn't use pesticides. We had no chemicals. My grandfather started in 1895, growing a small, about 2 acres of wheat, corn, squash, and other plants that they used for food, you know. And my grandfather was over 100 years old when he passed away in 1954. They say he's about 106 or around there, 105.
The Creator then made the great laws of nature for the well-being and harmony of all things and all creatures.
Well, Grandpa always had good produce, because it's like this, he said, everything has life. And everything, you know, interacted with one another. Everything required each other. Plants will actually coordinate with the air, the wind, and the insects and the birds, and everything had an association. Every plant has a spirit, you know, every plant species, like this grass here. There's millions and millions of grass, but it only has one spirit that looks after it. The spirit of the plant will talk to you. And that's why he sat in his garden. You have to get it to like you as a fellow being. Like, you know, you're there because they're there. And they're there because you're there. And so that relationship begins to expound into a relationship of love and kindness. You be good to your plants, and they'll give you the return. They'll give you love. But when we spray the land, we kill everything in that, insects, living things, and that is very destructive.
People mostly get their food now from the supermarkets, and they believe that they're getting good food. And it'll always be there. And the future doesn't bode well for that. Or not at a low price, anyway. The food's going to be out of reach of most people. So we see value in people learning how to grow their own food. We would be farming all of Muscadet ourselves in small, sustainable farms, or organically at some point. And feeding ourselves and feeding people locally, you know, 100-mile diet.
We need to be the caretakers of that, because that's who we are, the caretakers of the land. Not to destroy it, not to pollute it, but live in harmony with us. Because this is where our strength, our knowledge, and our wisdom, our voice, our way of life comes from.
Well, Grandpa, he had this theory. The spirit of the plant wants to be praised. And so you talk to the spirit of the plant, it will then appreciate and give you much more sustenance, you know. And it's all about sustenance. Sustaining the interaction of that whole world in which he relied on to, in order for him to make a good living.
Well, my job as a gardener is to develop this relationship with the plant. To see the plant as equal to me, to bring ourselves up to that level. It's an approach where we make an agreement with the plant. We'll nourish you, we'll bring you up, we'll take total care of you so that you'll grow up to be healthy and strong. And in turn, his part of the agreement is to give us life. How we observe that original agreement is through ceremony. We have corn ceremonies, we have potato ceremonies, we have ceremonies with virtually every plant that we grow for food. Many of the vegetables we eat today, like potatoes and corn, beans, squash, to name a few, these vegetables were first developed by indigenous Americans thousands of years ago. And we're reclaiming that heritage. The overall vision is our determination to reclaim a long, rich heritage of indigenous agriculture that goes back to antiquity.
We have our Three Sisters plantings over there. Those are quite interesting. They're a traditional way of planting. You make a hill, kind of like a volcano crater. You put your corn and your beans. You put those in the middle, and then you got your squash on the outside, and their roots interconnect, intertwine, and they support each other like the beans will climb right up the corn stalk.
All the other vegetables in that have chemicals in it, and I think that's what's hurting people. It's what's getting them sick. It's because the chemicals that are going into their body, so I think everybody should do it this way.
The toughest part of this job, most complaints I hear about, is the bending. Yeah, the back.
The work is hard, a lot of thistle, and there's like a lot of weed, and we keep getting canola that blows in. It's actually pretty fulfilling when you watch your plants and see them grow and actually get to taste them.
I was on welfare for maybe a month, and then I seen the advertisement, so yeah, I applied right away. I think it's so important for people to be working. That has a lot to do with spirit.
Well, we're taking people in the program that have generally not been in the workforce ever in their life or very little, or had a very poor experience in the workforce. These people have been on welfare. They're learning job skills, learning life skills, and the capacity of the co-op is being developed.
So maybe they can plant another 10 more acres next year and put 20 workers in the field.
We have over 20,000 acres in Muscadine, and this co-op has a quarter section here, 160 cultivated acres, and another 350 acres across the road available. That's certified organic as well. And they just haven't got the means to, the financial means to farm it right now. These projects have the potential of creating full employment for First Nations. It costs $7 billion a year or more now for First Nations in Canada being idle. You know, in health costs and school costs and jail costs, justice costs, and the welfare and everything else. You know, 100 acre field at 40,000 pounds an acre at a dollar a pound is about $4 million. That's not outside of the realm of possibilities for each reserve, growing potatoes and other vegetables as well. Growing the food, getting everybody off of welfare, and feeding the rest of Canada.
At one time in our community here in Muscadet, almost every family had a garden. There were gardens all around. We all farmed organically, you know, and the gardens grew great. You know, the tomatoes tasted great. Everything tasted great and everything grew well.
Well, Grandpa, he didn't grow potatoes in a row. He mounds. And in between the mounds, he would then put another batch of onions this way, or he'd put carrots this way. It was a wonderful mixed-up garden. But it was a good garden.
And there were also mixed farms, goats, sheep, chickens, cattle, grain farming. This community was full of small farms.
He would study his produce, and there were some birds that would come and peck away at the growth, you know, and so he would try to find a sparrowhawk, you know, and somehow bring it over to his place. I don't know how he did that, but he was able to do that. And there were certain kind of ants that he really looked at with great respect. They will kill some of the major insects, you know, that will eat the leaves and that will eat the produce. And he'd take these ants, transplant them there in the garden. That old man had that idea way, way back in 1940s. We knew that if we would learn how to associate the way that plants and insects and everything else associate and live together, we would be far better off for it. He was a funny old man, but a very, 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 I think, traditional science, you know? He was scientific.
You're listening to In the Garden, On the Farm. Your hosts, Paul and Robin. We hope you're enjoying the talk.
Our farms just disappeared. Our small farms gave way to bigger corporate farming and then chemical farming.
The co-op learned fairly quickly that they would not be able to borrow, being on the reserve. The Bank Act specifically says a First Nation person can borrow, and this is guaranteed by the Band or Indian Affairs when they're on the reserve. So they have to find a way of financing all operations from outside sources or from projected sales. Agriculture is subsidized on this continent, and where it's not subsidized, it just doesn't happen. So I fear for these projects once the funding runs out, the subsidies, if you will, if the government of Canada doesn't start putting them on the same footing, the same sort of subsidies that they're giving other farmers.
Great.
I think they've been talking with the Muskeg Lake people.
Oh, really?
About passing on the gift of seed potatoes.
We're really pleased to be able to partner with Muskeg. Heifer has provided about $50,000 over those 2 years, and they're just doing amazing things. Really, really pleased with what has been happening here.
Oh yeah, we have compost in ours. I just want to do
We have the capabilities. We have all the resources. We have this land, all this beautiful land. We have some of the most fertile land in North America, right here. We have the knowledge, the skills of farming.
They're just getting ready for the fall.
Our elders are still here, many of them today, to teach us.
Please take those little ones too. We'll use them for soup.
So there's no reason why we can't totally go back to reestablishing an agricultural way of life.
I got dirt in my boots.
It's about a mile, I think about a mile down this way. And we're going to the potato gardens.
Part of our mandate as Muskeg Organic Growers Co-op is to share our garden bounties with our community. So we're giving potatoes out to our elders. We're also giving potatoes out and vegetables to the school lunch program. We're sharing our experience and our knowledge in gardening with other First Nations like Flying Dust and Peter Ballantyne, Cree Nation. In a sense, passing on our gift that was given to us by our ancestors.
You see how big they are?
No, I didn't.
Look how big these are, man.
Wow, cool.
We're reaching out to other communities to form partnerships because we need partners to work with us, to help us grow our food, market our food, transport our food, and so on.
I didn't even wipe off the dirt just once. Much.
Another way to double your yield is to put more plant nutrients. And there's certain things that you can put on that are certified for organic. They sell fertilizer made out of alfalfa pellets, for instance. The partnership with Peter Ballantyne, or the collaboration with Peter Ballantyne, it means they're going to have access to dried fish bones and parts. And they're going to dry them and grind them up. And
for the compost.
For fertilizer.
That's good. We're just entering the organic food industry. And it is one of the fastest growing industries in North America, in the Americas, in the world.
I'm getting a lot of inquiries from First Nations across Western Canada about what's happening here and how can we do the same? How can we work on our own food sovereignty and our own food security in our First Nation?
Our workers are being trained how to drive tractors, how to change oil, how to weed the gardens, how to identify and recognize every type of weed and pest.
It's always good to learn, and I'm sure in the future I'll be teaching my children, and hopefully they'll be feeding their family.
Carrots.
They look like potatoes, but
that's why you don't like them, because you think they're potatoes. I love them. Mashed turnips and carrots.
I really look forward to being able to bring this back to our community and share all of this knowledge with our people and feed our people and sustain ourselves.
Gaining that independence and just people in the community and learning new things and knowing that you can get out there and do it yourself. You don't have to depend on anybody to do it for you.
But it's knowledge that we already have.
We have to understand that teaching and then apply it in our communities from one community to the other. And then that will create unity and a voice for one people.
This is a journey of discovery back into our past, and we're bringing those traditions and practices up to the present to replenish ourselves, to re-energize ourselves, to revitalize our communities so we can be healthy again.
And so, by following the great laws of nature, all beings can live in harmony with each other and be one with nature.
That was The Great Laws of Nature, Indigenous Organic Agriculture, from the Muscadet Organic Growers Co-op. We have a special announcement to share with you. There's an upcoming workshop this weekend, Permaculture Strategies Applied to Sustainable Design for Tropical Food Security, with Jude Hobbs and Tammy Davis. This workshop will be held Saturday and Sunday, March 8th and 9th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day, at the Residence Project Foundation in Kilauea. The workshop will feature various permaculture topics, including the ethics and principles of permaculture, design processes, soil building techniques, water harvesting, introduction to perennial plants, animals in the system, right livelihood and community networking, plenty of hands-on learning opportunities. You'll learn to propagate, harvest, and prepare a variety of foods, natural building with bamboo, using invasive species of bamboo for light construction, fencing, tools, etc., and much more. For more information, you can contact Tammy at resonance.is, that's Tammy, T-A-M-M-Y, at resonance.is, or call 541-510-9658.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank you for listening today. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha.